Welcome in, everybody. We are Sorry for Marking, and we're back for another round around our WWE water cooler here. My name's Wes. I'm here with my man Chase. Chase, how you doing this week, my man?
I am doing good. It's another week of wrestling, which means it's always a good week. Thank you all for joining us around the water cooler. One step closer to Extreme Rules.
Yes.
Can't wait for it. And we got a loaded week. We're in the middle of a great trilogy. I'm pumped today.
So you brought up the trilogy. We have part two of that today. We're going back to my Ruthless Aggression era. The trilogy is Little Guys. Hope you guys listened last week. If you did, you know that's not as negative as it sounds.
No, I hope you guys enjoyed last week too. I think there's a place in, obviously, in wrestling history for the Little Guys, and I hope I did Chris Jericho some justice by kind of signifying him being one of the foundation pieces for that. So I hope you guys enjoyed that first episode going back to the Attitude Era. But this week,
we are in the Ruthless Aggression Era, which is a very important and big time for the quote-unquote little guys, smaller wrestlers, I think. So we're going to have a good conversation because we've got cruiserweights to talk. We have guys who you never thought would get the opportunity winning world titles. It was an interesting time for those kinds of wrestlers, so we're going to have a good talk. Then the weekly stuff, some of our listeners aren't going to be too happy about this, I'm sure, but it was kind of a Roman heavy week, on Raw at least.
Yeah.
I mean, he was in, what, three or four segments?
It felt like the majority of Raw revolved around him. He was the story on Raw. So.
And that hasn't been the case of late.
No.
I mean, it was a short break. Don't get me wrong. It didn't. Yeah. It wasn't a long break.
It's like a 20-second timeout. But was it enough to get us back on board? We're going to dive deeper into that. I can't wait to get into that discussion because I know you got some hot takes possibly on that.
Everything about Roman's a hot take at this point.
I know. God, just his name is a hot take. Some good stuff on SmackDown as well, though.
Yes, Team Hell No. We are doing a podcast in 2018. We're about to talk about Team Hell No.
It's crazy to me, man. It's crazy. Never thought it would happen. There's a lot of stuff to get to. I'm excited about it.
And we're going to kick things off with a unique gimmick segment, we'll say. we're calling it Booking the Barbecue here at Sorry for Marking. So 4th of July just passed. Hope you guys had a great time. The American staple, the barbecue. So we're going to be booking the barbecue and try to figure out who would be on our Sorry for Marking 4th of July guest list.
Right, right. Now, we're over in the Philippines, Wes. Don't forget that. So they're probably like, whoa, what's all this barbecue? No, I'm just kidding. They probably know. They probably know our traditions. But we're going to talk about who we'd invite to a barbecue on this WWE roster. I'm excited about it.
For our listeners in the Philippines, let us know if that means anything to you. Look us up. Sorry for Marking. That's where we are across the board. Do you all care about this next segment?
Well, I think any excuse, I think they may not care about the segment, but they understand that Americans, as well as any other human, loves an excuse to party. Okay. Just like we Americans, you know how we just go all out for Cinco de Mayo? Maybe we're over in the Philippines, they're going all out for Sorry for Marking Independence Day, maybe.
That would
be big. Maybe they already have who in mind who they'd invite to a barbecue. So we'll get their feedback.
Be sure you are following us, though, guys. Sorry for Marking. And make sure you are subscribed to the show. We do this once a week here. We're trying to grow this thing. We've had success of late. So thank you guys for that. We couldn't do it without you. Just keep fighting the good fight out there, spreading the word, and invite people in. Because we have very important wrestling discussions, like who you would invite to a barbecue. The discussions that need to be had.
These discussions need to be had in this wrestling world. Speaking of this wrestling world, before we go any further, wanted to give a quick, I guess, you know, thoughts and prayers have become cliche in our social media world, but our thoughts this week here, Sorry for Marking, really are with Matt Capitelli, a hometown kid, came up through OVW here in Louisville, Kentucky, so we're very familiar with him, especially Wes. He kind of was reaching his peak during Wes's era, during the Ruthless Aggression era. He unfortunately passed away after a long battle, kind of back and forth with brain cancer. Matt Capitelli is one of those people, I know you hear it a lot, but it does seem like, and we're pretty close to home with it all here, that there was never a bad word said about Matt Capitelli, and as good a guy as you'll ever meet. So our hearts are hurting a little bit in the wrestling world, especially here in our hometown of Louisville, Kentucky. But Matt Capitelli's memory will never be forgotten, I don't think, in this business.
Well said. Well said.
You want to tell them where they can follow us at on our social media?
Sorry for Marking there, guys, across the board. Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. There will also be links there for you to subscribe to the show. So we keep this mostly an audio thing here, but you can find the link to subscribe on all those accounts.
Yes, and like Wes said, continue telling your friends. We appreciate it. we appreciate the follows on social media, but also more importantly, Wes is right. We do appreciate all those subscribers that we're getting, all the new listeners we're getting. We feel the love and we're sending it right back. So hopefully we got a good episode in store for you today.
All right, well, let's lighten this thing up a little bit.
Yes.
It's time for the gimmick segment.
Lighten it up indeed. This might be our most lighthearted gimmick segment. We've had some heated gimmick segments on here now. Some real white knucklers.
And I will say, I took some heat after last week's gimmick segment from some of our Day One is H listeners.
You deservedly so.
So we last week, if you all missed it, we did our Mount Rushmores of tag teams, and I caught some flack.
Deservedly so. If for those of you who haven't listened, go back and listen. Wes just very sorry for marking. Do y'all know how many wrestling podcasts there are? We have no room for error to be talking about Team Little Big being one of the four best tag teams of all time.
Boo this man!
That is what Wes did.
Four apiece. Top
okay.
Eight.
In the top eight. Don't put Team Little Big within my... Don't add them to my four, okay? I'm glad you caught some heat. Have you changed your mind at all? So, do you got the chisel out? Are you already chiseling a new name in? New face in?
No. Stand by it. Fuck all y'all.
I know what you're doing with the chisel. You're just chiseling on your face in place of Braun Strowman's on the Mount Rushmore.
The most entertaining tag team of the modern era. Tell me one better. Besides New Day.
How much time you got, Wes? I can think of a few. I can think of a few more successful ones. But it is your Mount Rushmore.
Okay. I just wanted you to know that people were holding me accountable out there.
Well, let's have a better showing this week, shall we?
I do feel the pressure.
Uh-oh. So do I, though. This is actually an important gimmick segment. We're talking about lighthearted and we're lighting it up, but there's a lot on the line when it comes to a good barbecue and attending a good party.
So it's July 4th, Independence Day. Happy birthday, America. Sorry for marking here. We're holding a barbecue. We've got a short guest list. It's prime spots.
Mm-hmm. Maybe three or four people apiece, tops. We're not big. We're not Project X kind of partiers here.
No. Keep it low key. So who are we inviting to this thing? I've got some people right off the bat that come to mind, but I kind of want to hear what you're thinking.
Okay.
Because there's a few different kinds of parties we can have here, I should say.
There is. And I'm a person who likes a mixed bag of people at a party for the most part.
But I want you to tell the people why we're even doing this. How did we get this idea?
I had to work on 4th of July. And of course, whenever you have to work on 4th of July, what was going through my head on the way to work was, I wish I could be doing something else. Well, what do I wish I could be doing? Wish I was at a barbecue with Sasha Banks right now. Doesn't take a Day One as H fan to know that I probably was wishing that. So out of that stemmed the idea, okay, if I was at a barbecue with Sasha Banks, who else would I invite to the barbecue? So you guys already know who my first person is.
And if my answer can't be no one,
then it has to be somebody.
I proceed down the list.
If this is just not a date, then we need a barbecue. And the next three people that come to my mind are somebody who I said last week was the greatest modern tag team of all time.
That's who I thought of first, too.
The New Day. I mean, is there a more fun fun group of guys, though,
no.
In WWE?
If you want a fun 4th of July barbecue, you, first of all, make a ton of pancakes, and then you invite the New Day.
Exactly. No, I agree. The New Day are guaranteed for me.
Plus, New Day, they seem like the type that would just bring some really good, like, besides pancakes, I feel like they could bring some good things to the table, bring some good sides. Kofi's got his Jamaican twist from his past. I'm sure he picked up some good recipes
some
there.
Some jerk recipes. Are you not allowing them to bring pancakes?
No, they can bring pancakes.
Okay, because that was kind of my criteria. They need to bring some pancakes.
I don't think they would come without pancakes.
That's true.
And I want them to come.
What about Bootios? Bootios allowed? Ooh.
Maybe if they would just choose one or the other.
Okay, we'll talk about it. So Sasha, New Day. I'm going to throw one more at you. No Way Jose.
Whoa. Okay. That's not a pick I saw coming, but now that you say it, it seems like a no-brainer.
I need somebody. I'm not that guy at the barbecue. I need somebody to be that guy. I'm not the leader. I can't get people on dancing, and I can't liven up the place. I'm usually the laid-back one. I feel like No Way Jose would do a good job of livening up the place.
Now, does this include his conga line?
No.
Okay.
I'm not cooking for all them people.
Tom the Cheeseburger is not invited.
We got to see how many of them are even still alive. We'll get to that. Mojo Rawley might have took care of the conga line. No, they're not invited. But I think he'd still come in without his conga line because we could be his conga line.
I like it.
Okay. I'm going to give you that one. Let me stew on it. Give me some routes that you thought you could take.
Okay. So if the New Day are coming,
okay,
I kind of like that route. You know, I'm thinking invite like Becky Lynch. I think she'd be a great addition. She seems like a lot of fun, super funny, entertaining. Just come chill, have a good time. I think she's a no-brainer. Jeff Hardy, everything I've seen of him. I'm kind of going non-kayfabe here. Jeff Hardy seems like a cool, chill dude, fun guy to hang out with.
Yeah.
But then if we want to go the more adult route, which is probably going to make for the better party.
Well, you went the adult route with Jeff, I feel.
Hey, he's a changed man.
Jeff knows how to party, though, still. But go ahead. Let's go the adult route then.
So first right off the bat, I'm inviting the club, Gallows and Anderson.
Oh, yeah. Good brothers.
And we're building around that. If you have any questions as to why, listen to them on the Steve Austin podcast. It was basically just those three guys sitting around drinking beer, telling stories.
And you know they would bring the beer. And don't Gallows just look like that uncle who wears like the Asics, who can just stand at that grill all day with his apron on and just cook all day? Anderson could just be bringing him seasonings and different stuff and meat. I feel like, yeah, that's a great pick. Good brothers.
And then from there, the two guys who I think we've had this conversation before because we talk about wrestling too much and it just rolls into this sometimes. If the people on the main roster, who do we see ourselves kind of like, say we made it, like we're on the main roster, we're with these guys touring the world. Who do we kind of see us kind of fitting with personality wise? So I'm inviting Roman Reigns and Dean Ambrose.
Oh, Dean Ambrose is perfect.
Oh, and the Usos, that whole little crew. They're kind of a crew, if you guys didn't know.
Yeah,
I'm inviting that whole crew with the club, and we're just having a good old time.
Yes, and Dean wouldn't hate it if you brought your wife. Would not hate it. She's very much invited. Yeah, that's Dean Ambrose, Roman Reigns, that whole crew is a good call. I think we got a good little... Now, here's where we run into some issues real quick in this gimmick segment. We got Roman and the Usos and Dean and the Good Brothers here. We got the New Day, No Way Jose, Sasha Banks, Becky Lynch over here. Are they going to get along good enough to enjoy this barbecue?
No.
It doesn't feel like Gallows and Anderson would enjoy No Way Jose too much.
So that's why I said there's a couple different ways we can go.
Okay.
So if we invite the New Day, we're going that route. Like, that's the party we're having.
Mm-hmm.
If we invite the club, that we're going that route. That's okay. The party. Maybe throw Jeff over to that side. He might fit in better there.
So we're either dancing, cooking, enjoying like some Bud Lamaritas, or we're getting hammered and cooking probably better food, but not dancing and probably not doing much active things.
No, but
we're probably just sitting around having a great time, though.
Lots of laughs, lots of fun.
Well, that's a win-win.
Sasha can be there either way.
I know.
Okay.
She would be. Yeah. Sasha is invited either way.
Me and Alexa are hosting. That's why she's not invited.
No, you didn't even mention Alexa.
We're hosting.
We're hosting. Alexa's his wife in this scenario, folks, if you guys didn't know. He's only confident in saying that because his heel wife doesn't listen to the show. But, yes, Alexa can be there too. Will Alexa and Sasha get along?
No.
Okay. That's fine. That's fine. If they duke it out, it's a barbecue. What's a good family barbecue without a family fight?
True. So we're covering all the bases.
We are covering all the bases. So, guys, let us know who you would invite to your 4th of July wrestling barbecue. We all know that while you were sitting there, well, I'm sure you all love your families, you all love your friends, but if you're like us, you were sitting at your little cookout, your little fireworks show on 4th of July thinking, man, I wish I was sitting here with Roman Reigns. Man, I wish I was sitting here with Dean Ambrose. This would be so much cooler. We know you're thinking it. Let it out. Let your feelings out. That's what we're here for around the water cooler. Oh, we were thinking it. You were thinking it. Now, we invited some people, and we want to hear who you would invite. So let us know. I'm sure I know a few of our listeners that have given us some great feedback, probably have some ridiculous scenarios about who they would invite.
Hopefully I get some better feedback this week.
No, I think you had the better idea. If I had to choose, I would pick the people who you chose for our barbecue.
You would leave your barbecue and come to mine?
With Sasha.
Yeah, I know.
And come to yours.
I know that's
not dissing the New Day at all. There is definitely a time and place for that kind of barbecue. But Wes is right. I couldn't pass up the opportunity to get drunk with the Good Brothers and Ambrose and Hardy and Reigns and
Usos.
Bunch of good guys. And Sasha.
Yeah, I know.
Okay. Just making sure.
All right. Well, I'm glad we got that important topic out of the way.
We should make this an annual cookout. So next year, let's look back at who we would disinvite and any new guys we would invite. Okay. I have a feeling next year Andrade Cien Almas might get an invite. He's not ready this year, though.
Does he speak English?
It doesn't matter.
Oh, it kind of does.
Cookout language is universal. Burger, hot dog, beer. We got Samoans. Well, that's American still, I guess.
They speak English.
They do speak English. Well, Zelina could come. Oh. And she does speak English.
Problem solved.
There we go.
Then it's a pool party.
Next year's party's going to be lit. We're not holding back next year. We're just inviting the full female roster. Bikini party. But that's who we would invite, though. I think that's a solid crew. But we need to make it an annual thing and look back.
Okay, I like that.
See who we would take out and who we would add.
Let's roll on into this weekly stuff. We are on the road to Extreme Rules, which kind of just feels like a bridge to SummerSlam.
Yeah, and that's fine. But I think we're on the road to some probably pretty great matches at Extreme Rules, though.
We'll get into more of that next week. We've got one more week of Raw and SmackDown, and then we'll be on to Extreme Rules. So next week, we'll talk a little bit about the card and how it's shaping out. But for this week, let's start off with Raw. And like I said, it was a Roman-heavy week. And I'm sorry, haters. I'll explain myself.
Uh-oh.
But I've got to do it.
Uh-oh.
And this time.
Oh, my gosh.
It's time! It's time! It's...
Sorry for markings. Markout performer of the week.
Time! 1 week removed from when I named Team Little Big to my Mount Rushmore of tag teams.
Here you come bearing us
again. I don't know if this is the best thing to do. This isn't playing it as safe as I should. But guys, I think something's happening with Roman, and I think he's low-key killing it right now.
Ooh.
Do you think I'm on to something
here? Yes. Yes. I think you're putting a lot of faith in WWE that they haven't proven to you that you should be putting into him. But I see what you're saying, though, and I agree that Roman has been killing it, and whatever they're doing with him, I think it's starting to work. Starting to.
Roman's a hard topic to kind of think about unbiasedly, because when there's so much going on with him and what he means of the overall landscape, mm-hmm. especially the main event picture. But if I can separate myself from the controversy and, you know, is he a babyface? Is he a heel? Should he be pushed? Should he not be pushed? I'm really enjoying his work lately. I'm super entertained, and I think he's just been performing really well.
And that's the key. I think the key is not to get caught up in, and I know we're hypocrites in saying this, where he's going, what he is, who he is. Everybody gets caught up, and it's natural. But the key is, are you just enjoying what he's doing? Because if you are, whether you want to boo him or cheer him, it's definitely better than what we have been getting, which is straight up rejection of him on pretty much all sides.
So here's why I think he deserves the award this week. So our markout performer, it's because, so he is polarizing. We know that. There's people out there who hate him. There's people out there who love him. There's a reason he's in that spot. There's a reason he gets booed out of the building every week too.
Yes.
So I feel like right now he's really hitting it out of the park. He's giving the people who like him something to cheer while also giving the people who boo him and hate him something to hate.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen in the past flashes of this, but consistently, like, it's the little things in his promos. I think he seemed, in, you know, his in-ring, just standing there, traditional promo, I think he's looked really good. He's looked confident. I think he's done good the last 2 or 3 weeks. But it's the little things, like his little reactions, his little responses. It doesn't feel like the forced babyface, corny response anymore.
Mm-mm.
He's kind of being a dick.
Right.
Like, he's been real cocky and arrogant and kind of dickish the last couple of weeks, and I've really enjoyed it.
And it makes sense. It just feels natural, and it makes sense because somebody in his position should be like that. And there's no reason why he shouldn't have been like this before. And I'm glad that they're inching towards that. I don't see it as strongly. I think because I've seen those flashes, I'm hoping this is not just another flash.
Mm-hmm. What feels different about this one is I've seen it for 2 or 3 weeks in a row.
Mm-hmm.
Which still isn't a huge chunk of time by any means.
No.
But in the past, you'd maybe see it once on this episode of Raw. 3 weeks later, you see him do something kind of dickish or heelish.
Yeah.
But I feel like he's consistently been that guy. To the point where these other, you know, I listen to the Wade Keller podcast typically, they're really critical of it because he's being so heelish when he should be a babyface.
Right.
When I think, once again, if you take yourself out of it, he's just being the natural Roman me and you have been saying he should be for years. feels like they're maybe finally adding layers to a character.
I think another reason why it feels like that, why it feels like maybe this time might be different, is because they're using it as maybe the, it feels like kind of the foundation of a story. Kind of him being so stubborn on Monday night to not make that tag to Lashley. That's kind of a, that's a story of Roman that we've never gotten. He's always been the guy overcoming. He's always been Lashley. He's always been the guy who's just better and above, and everything else doesn't apply to, he don't go through those emotional ups and downs. He don't have those hard times. He doesn't get inside his own head. He's not stubborn. Like, he's never been anything that we can latch onto. Now, this we can latch onto. It's not that we can relate to it, but it's a story that we can relate to. And that's what's the key here. And they haven't done that with Roman a lot. It's always been a generic, here is your face who will overcome. But that's not who Roman is.
No, he's felt like the video game character for the last couple of years. Where now I feel like they're adding some layers to this character.
Right.
And it's just more believable.
Yes. Definitely well-earned Performer of the Week award.
Not to mention he was in what was probably the best match of the week. At least the best match of that night.
Revival?
The tag match with, well, he was in two tag matches. His first tag match with Rollins against Ziggler and McIntyre.
Yes, really, really good match. And I got real pumped when I realized that that was happening. We're just getting so many. I mean, I know wrestling hasn't been great as far as the weekly stuff goes, but it feels like every week we're getting a matchup where you're like, whoa, right. Can't wait to see that, which is cool. That was one of them. He did kill it in both of the tag team matches, but that was definitely the match of the night on Raw.
And a little side note, there's a buzz when he was in there with McIntyre.
Yep.
And that's at least the second time that's happened with McIntyre. We heard that same buzz when he faced off with Strowman, and now when he faced off against Roman, there's something there.
There's something there, and WWE wants something to be there. Like, they wanted us to react to that. I think it would have been a big step back if we just all would have sat on our asses. I wanted to get your thoughts on that, because that felt like, and I'm telling you, man, I know my New Year's resolution was letting the cake bake, but don't you just see a WrestleMania main event when you look at those two? With Roman as the heel, and maybe the anti-Roman McIntyre, who kind of stands with that audience that's been booing Reigns this whole time. I know we talked about it with Daniel. It could happen with Daniel too. Yeah. But now it feels much closer that it could happen here, just because they're on the same roster and McIntyre all of a sudden is on fire. Roman got two matches, and I think he got two segments, didn't he?
Yeah, and that's kind of part of the whole thing. Like, him saying, you know, give us the match. You already have a match tonight. It doesn't matter. You know, he's just taking on too much. Like, he's a little too cocky, a little too arrogant. It came back to bite him.
It did.
He wouldn't tag Lashley in. He ended up getting his ass kicked to end the show. Not in the show, but in the match. We're going to talk about the end of the show.
We are. But, you know, I hope that this goes in the direction that I think you're thinking it's going in. I hope it's not just a deal where Roman overcomes this in a couple weeks and goes back to saying, I'm the uncrowned champion, to saying all these bullshit things.
Let me ask you this. So here's what I'm thinking, why it could, and I've fallen into this trap before, I know that, but I'm going to continue to do it, damn it. This is called sorry for marking. I'm going to continue to mark out.
It's okay. We all do it.
So maybe because of guys like Braun and Seth and McIntyre, maybe he's not as pressured to fit into that top guy role anymore. So maybe this is allowing them to kind of loosen the reins, so to speak.
Yeah.
And, you know, stop trying to force him into that role. Maybe like, okay, we have all these options now. Maybe we can let Roman do some other things over here and play around with some other character work.
I think you're 100%. That's a great point. I think you're 100% right as far as that goes. That's not something I really thought about, because it does feel like it hadn't been a quick rise for some of those guys. Definitely for Braun, it feels like this has been, we've been waiting on his moment for a long time. But you're right, they are getting to the point where you can build shows around guys like Braun. I'm not going to say Drew yet, but obviously it looks like it's going to get to the point where he's going to be in that discussion.
Well, we talked about it. Roman, he was a big part of Raw this week, but the last few weeks the show's been built around Seth and Braun.
You're right, and it's been good, and those things have been good. And I think, like I said a few weeks ago, maybe we needed this Roman break. And now maybe this is kind of a reset.
Well, it's going to be interesting to see. Hopefully, they're not fooling me again, and here in a few weeks, I'm owning up to it. But
yeah,
we'll see. I think something could be happening with Roman.
I hope you're right. Real quick, everything we say, you got to give with the caveat that they're about to be in Brooklyn at SummerSlam. And I don't want to look past Extreme Rules, but all I keep thinking about is, how are they going to make Brooklyn not just obliterate and hijack whatever match Roman is in at SummerSlam?
But think if they keep going down the route they're going. SummerSlam's what? A month and a half away, at least. Yeah. So that's a long time for Roman to keep being cocky, being arrogant, kind of being a dick. That could be the reaction they want by that point. True. Or at least be okay with.
True.
And I'm not saying you fully were going to see a monster Roman Reigns heel run, as amazing as that would be. Mm-hmm. But maybe you just let him lean into that natural side of his character a little bit more. Mm-hmm. And you play to both sides of it. He can still be the hero on the house shows that all the kids go crazy for. But then when it comes to the pay-per-views and the TV crowds, you know, he can play into that side a little bit.
It'll be interesting to see who his opponent is when we get to that point. Mm-hmm. You know, whatever story they're telling. And we'll be able to see that play out, and we'll see which direction it's going to go in. But I hope it goes in the direction that you're saying, because that sounds a lot better than going back to the same old Roman. Now, if you believe some of these dirt sheets, that it's looking just like Roman and Brock again at SummerSlam.
Oh, man.
But that still does leave room for what you're saying, and we'll get to that when we get to it. But I think there's still room for Roman to do what you're saying he's going to do against Brock Lesnar, even. We'll see. There's a lot of other guys on this roster, though, man. It's a deep roster right now. Where do you want to get to next? So are we going to cover? Do you want to talk about McIntyre? I know there's not much McIntyre, Ziggler.
Anything you want to say, go ahead. Because we probably won't circle back to this. But
I can't wait for that 30-minute, just announced this week, 30-minute Iron Man match at Extreme Rules. I think we might have our match of the night, potentially.
Ziggler versus Rollins.
Ziggler versus Rollins for the Intercontinental title. No idea who's going to win. No idea where they're going. I know Drew will be involved. I don't know if Roman would help. I don't know. But there's just so much intrigue. I think that the Ziggler-Rollins thing is going to be really good. It already has been, but I think this will be a good cap off to it.
Agreed. Ziggler seems like a much different guy now after working in the same ring with McIntyre and Rollins. And
I know.
It's elevated him. I didn't necessarily think could happen at this point.
He looks fresh. I mean, he's still wrestling. His wrestling's always been awesome. But just everything he's doing feels with a little more oomph now. Like, he's got something under him he can work with.
All right, well, I'm glad you were so high on all that, because I'm going to let you kind of lead this next segment.
Okay.
Because if you're going to be the Sasha Mark here and invite her to your barbecue, you've got to handle this side of things as well.
I know.
You've been waiting for it. You've wanted Sasha in a big spot on Raw and a big storyline, and she's getting that. This Bayley-Sasha thing is finally happening.
It is.
This week, we got them in counseling.
Is it happening, Wes?
Dr. Shelby returns. What do you think, man? How'd you like this week? Bayley and Sasha go to counseling.
How many months have we been waiting for what we got last week? With
Bayley attacked Sasha in the locker room before WrestleMania, mm-hmm. and we thought that was it.
So at least March, April, May, June, July, at least 5 months, going on 6 months, at least, that they've been doing this. Somehow, by some miracle, last week when Bayley attacked Sasha, it got them back on track.
By some miracle.
How in the world, after 5 months, did you finally get us invested in this and back on track? You did it with something different, something new, a side of Bayley we've never seen, a Sasha beatdown we've never seen before, violent. And then they say Bayley's got counseling. That's fine. Okay. This is fine. They've got the fans invested. Surely they're not going to drop the ball. She's got counseling. Then I see this week, when it comes to the night of, that it's Bayley and Sasha in counseling. I'm like, okay, well, they're not going to have them in the same room. It's a blood feud now. They can't be in the same room. That's like Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens back in the day. That's like Ciampa and Gargano now. They can't be in the same room together. Sure enough, Wes, they meet outside and just talk. Like Bayley didn't just obliterate Sasha Banks last week. And you got this counseling thing that felt like it should have been back in March. This felt like the start of their issues. So you get us, by some miracle, invested after 5 months, and then in 1 week, I don't know about you, but it erased almost all of what they did the week before.
Yeah, it took all the heat, all the seriousness. Like you said, this should be a blood feud. This should be the Ciampa Gargano. This should be, who else did you say?
Kevin and Sammy.
Yeah,
back
Owens
in the day.
And Sammy. Yeah. Like, that's what this should be. And this shouldn't be a Daniel Bryan Kane counseling thing. That's where we've seen Dr. Shelby before. Right. It was with those two. So, yeah, it took all the heat, all the seriousness away from it immediately.
Why
one week
adding
later.
Humor?
1 week later.
The story is there for you. There is no... The story... You don't have to create a story with Sasha and Bailey. It's a story as old as time. Two best friends are now former best friends because they couldn't get along. They got to a point where they both had the same goals and it exploded. Why are they muddying this up with counseling, with these teasers, with no woman, like neither Sasha or Bailey being the full villain in this, neither Sasha nor Bailey being the full good guy? I just don't know. And then just to get into the counseling itself, them imitating each other. I'm Bailey. I'm Sasha Banks.
That's the best you've got.
That's what you're giving us? If you're going to go humor, at least make it funny. Kids aren't laughing at that. You can't say that's for the kids either. That's not funny for anybody. It's a lame attempt at humor and a lame attempt at something in this feud. I don't get it. I just don't understand it.
Took all the momentum away, and they put Sasha and Bailey in a position. That's not their strength. Especially Bailey.
Especially Bailey, but Sasha too. That's never been like neither of them have been able to really navigate that emotional spectrum when it comes to those kind of segments. They're pretty much one tone, and which is fine because the one tone each of them have is perfect for their rivalry.
Mm-hmm.
But somehow they're taking that tone away and giving them Dr. Shelby, and I don't know, man.
Well, if there's one thing that will make you feel better about it, I caught Michael Cole at the end. Well, ladies and gentlemen, if there's one thing that's clear here, this is going to take a long time. So settle in, Chase.
It's terrible, man. Even Michael Cole and the announcers didn't even sound like they enjoyed it. They didn't laugh at the stuff, at the humor.
Well, not even the forced laughs.
No. No, not even their stereotypical laughs. Just, no, it just didn't work.
I don't understand the meaning of this.
This was a failure of a segment all around. It's so frustrating. Because as a Sasha fan, and you had it right there. That was it. That was
one
the tipping
ago.
Point.
One like you ago. Said, it was a miracle that you even had it.
What made them think that they could do that and then turn around and put them in the same room and have them sit on a couch and talk to somebody about it? Like, what has Sasha ever, when has she ever gave an indication that she would ever want to do that? I don't know. And then the fact, why are they even going to counseling? Like, I keep thinking, just put them in a match. Curtis, if y'all can't get along, you're going to counseling. I'm giving you one more chance now. You're teaming up. If you can't get...
Isn't his tagline, we settle things in the ring?
That's the whole tagline for Raw, yeah. And we are not settling in the ring. I don't... Why are they having to go to counseling when you got Braun Strowman flipping cars? And I just... It's a mess, man. Monday nights have been a mess for me lately, personally, and this is just adding to that on Monday Night Raw. It's just adding to it. Not all is bad, but this right here is bad, and it just happens to be my second favorite wrestler in the company, so it sucks.
It's just putting you on such a roller coaster of emotions. Like, yeah. You wait for months, and you finally get what you think is it, and then they follow it up with this.
Yeah, they lost me months ago. That's what I thought it was such a miracle. They lost you months ago, too. I thought that's why it was such a miracle that they got us back on board, and they take that all away with good old Dr. Shelby. I did tell you, I want to say this, though, and this is me maybe putting too much faith in WWE, just like you maybe putting too much faith about Roman. If this all leads to Sasha and Bailey wrestling and coming back together to reform the Boss and Hug connection and win the first ever women's tag team titles against an awesome like heel team on a big stage, all will be forgiven. That will be awesome. If that is not where they're going, then, man, this is going to be, as Michael Coe would say, this is going to take a really long time.
So, to me, those were the two big things from Raw. I guess that kind of tells you the quality of, I don't know if quality is the word, but just the consistency of Raw this week. You have 3 hours of television, and we have two main things to talk about.
Well, I think the best things that are happening on Raw, like the best performers and the best moments, are all happening in one cluster, in one group of people. McIntyre, Ziggler, Roman, Rollins, and Owens and Braun up until really this past week.
That's the next thing I want to talk about those guys.
Let's talk about them because it's been up and down, but I think all the great stuff had been in one kind of story almost.
So they closed the show. I don't even want to talk about that too much. You guys probably saw it. Braun pushed over a porta potty with Kevin Owens in it. Not the most impressive thing we've seen Braun do.
Not at all.
Not even close.
Not close.
But I do want to give an honorable mention, because I think, like, if we were given a markout performer of the month type thing, I think Kevin Owens has been consistently killing it.
Absolutely.
All the way back to, he kind of carried the Money in the Bank build in that Money in the Bank match.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
So I like everything he's doing with Braun here. I know a lot of Kevin Owens' marks aren't super happy with it because they think he should be more in the Braun situation, you know, like more on top. But I think it's really, if you look at his past couple years, he's really cemented his status as a top heel because he's always working with the top dudes. He's put over Shane. He's put over Daniel Bryan.
Exactly.
Now he's working with LeBron, and his character work is off the charts. I just really like everything he's doing lately, and I'm cool with him being that top heel that works with all the top babyfaces.
The highest compliment for the top heel is putting him with these babyfaces. He can't be what Braun is right now, because Braun is what Braun is right now. What he can be is the perfect foil for Braun. Kevin Owens kills any role you put him in. Any role. I know it's weird to say that because he's been a heel this whole time, but he's been in different roles as a heel. He's been with Jericho. He's done the Face of America thing. He's done so much. This is one of my favorites from him. And I know you are more, you like kind of the more badass ass-kicker Kevin Owens too. But this to me is the most entertaining form of Kevin Owens, because then he goes out in the ring and kills it on pay-per-views.
So tell me this. I'm starting to root for KO a little bit here. Because speaking of looking like a dick, Braun's kind of just looking like a dick. I mean, Kevin Owens isn't the most stand-up guy, but what's he really done to Braun?
That's true. He hasn't done a whole lot, has he?
No.
He's really hadn't done
a lot. And
he's
been so entertaining. Braun's kind of, he's fallen into that same cycle that we've seen Braun in for a while now. Like, I'm kind of on KO side here.
You're hurting my brain actually thinking about this now. I was just blindly on Braun's side thinking, Kevin's getting his... And now I'm thinking, what has Kevin actually done? All I can recall in my mind is Braun doing awful things to Kevin for the last month.
Yep.
So he flipped over his car a week ago. Tonight he dumps off the porta potty. And I want to go back to one of our shows. And I apologize, guys. We've done, how many shows now? Are we at almost 50?
Yeah, this is 49.
49. So we're almost at our 50th episode. I forget a lot. But we had a discussion where we talked about at some point with these Braun stunts, and I think it was when he pulled over the stage with the scalp or whatever he did on top of somebody.
You guys remember the grappling hook.
The grappling hook. At some point, you realize they can only go to a certain level with this. And I think they reached it and they're like, uh-oh. What crazy stunt can he do now? Because it gets huge pops and has the internet buzzing and it gets everything they want. But when it fails, it looks ridiculous. And this just looked ridiculous. It was too long, him dragging the porta potty all the way through the back. It was fun to see. But then the payoff with that little, what was it, like a 3 foot?
Yeah.
I'm looking down. I thought, man, I could just hop off that. That was nothing. It was just goofy. But I guess there's a place for that. But
Going back to the Ruthless Aggression era, I did a lot of Kane research the last couple of weeks on our Giants trilogy, and seeing Kane chokeslam Eric Bischoff off like a 15-foot stage through
vicious
a table.
Bump. Vicious bump.
And then I see Kevin Owens fall 2 feet in a porta potty that he may not even have been in, really. different times.
Different times. So that didn't end it on a high note, but I will give a shout out to Kevin Owens. He is killing it in this role. I got to go back and watch. What is he doing to even heal it up in this situation? Has he done anything so dastardly?
I mean, he's real scared.
He wanted
of
people
Braun,
to team up to take out Braun.
Which is very good strategy.
Good strategy. I hope this leads to something good with them, though. I think they could have a good match.
The rumor, which if you guys don't want to hear rumors, maybe skip ahead for 20 seconds. But
starting now.
The rumor is a cage match at Extreme Rules. And that this past week would kind of lend itself to that with Kevin Owens running away.
He's always able to escape.
Yeah, so put him in a cage.
Yeah.
So that'll be fun.
I know that you threw shade on Wade Keller tonight a little bit, saying, how he views Roman and how he should view Roman. But he had a funny point that Kevin Owens had literally like a host city. He was outside. He could have went anywhere. And he went into the porta potty.
Right by the door.
Right by the door. Wrestling, man, you gotta love it. Some weeks you just gotta love it. During the summer particularly is when you get some of these more goofy things that happen, but it's always fun. No knock on Braun and Kevin, but this was a ridiculous way to end Raw. You got any other miscellaneous or hot rapid fire things you want to? You've been Mr. Hot Take lately with some of these opinions.
Have I?
Given Roman the Performer, having Team Little Big as your third greatest tag team of all time.
Fourth
no, greatest.
Don't be crazy.
Sorry.
No, you're right. I need to kind of rein it back in. So just one more thing in rapid fire. Mojo Riley, the future Universal Champion and the biggest heel. Nah, just kidding. I'm done with the hot takes.
No hot takes from Mojo?
No,
you,
I just...
You've been liking Mojo, though.
Yeah, I like what I'm seeing from Mojo. I wanted to get a temperature check from you because I've been higher on Mojo than you have. So I just kind of wanted to get a temperature check since we've got this new uber-focused, intense Mojo, if it was doing anything for you.
I do. I like the intense Mojo. I do like that. I'm still not sold on him in the ring, but that we'll address that after he has, you know, another match or so. But I do like what they're doing right now. I want to take this time to say, Mojo, you would have got invited to the... Mojo was a prime barbecue candidate with his whole stay hype thing. Yeah, I was trying to liven up that barbecue. But this Mojo, no.
Mm-mm.
This Mojo's
no
not
fun.
Going anywhere near. Did you see what he did to that conga line on Monday?
Mm-hmm.
God, he Baileyed that thing. That's what I call when somebody viciously, almost illegally beats down innocent people. He Baileyed it. So... Mojo Rawley definitely deserves some props. I can't wait till he just moves on to a bigger thing because
this is an all right starter feud.
Yeah, it's a great starter feud for him, but it feels like he's had about 3 starter feuds.
Right. Well, that's the thing. You got to follow it up with something.
Right. You got
to
give me something.
I'd love to see him like in a feud with maybe like a...
Elias. Just that next... I think he needs to go to that next
level. Bobby
Roode. Yeah. Somebody like that.
Speaking of Elias, what the hell?
He's not. He had a little backstage segment. He said he's not performing for those people.
I know, but a few weeks ago, we thought he was about to have like a summertime feud with Rollins over the IC title. He hasn't been on TV
hardly.
You got
a deep roster, man.
I know, it's tough.
It's tough. You got to fight for that brass ring now. Braun Strowman's pushing people off stages and porta potties. What can you do to one up that, Elias? You ain't pushed nobody off nothing in anything. We'll see.
Ready to get to that blue brand?
Yeah, I'm surprised. We just went a whole Raw recap, and you didn't mention Alexa Bliss one time except for the barbecue gimmick segment.
I'm trying, like I said, I'm trying to have a good under-control week here.
Another quick shout-out to Constable Corbin, who continues to kill it in his row as well. So these Corbin and Mojo, kind of these polarizing guys who have been teetering on that, are they garbage or are they, like, actually pretty damn good? Both have some momentum now.
I think about it, I kind of liked Raw this week. Like, there was even the little stuff, the Mojo, the Baron Corbin. Like, there was a lot of stuff I liked. It wasn't great all the way through, but there was a lot of stuff I liked.
Yeah, it wasn't bad. It was some nights I think Raw is just goofy fun. Like, when you have no off season, it's hard.
Right. So sometimes you have to take the small victories. So seeing Baron Corbin show some flashes in this new role, seeing Mojo Rawley show some flashes, like, sometimes you got to look for the little character work, looking at the little things Roman might be doing.
And we complain that we don't get that almost every week. So on the nights we do get it, you're right. You can't completely shit on Raw for not giving us any big things when they gave us a bunch of little details that are probably going to pay off come SummerSlam.
But since you brought it up, no Alexa Bliss promo, and that always raises Raw at least one letter grade.
You mean lowers Raw? No. Oh, you mean when she has a promo?
Yes, yes.
Okay, because I would say having no promo actually raises the Raw. No, I'm just kidding. She's the best. She's the best on the mic. You're right. It does lower Raw that she didn't have a promo.
Mm-hmm. 3 segments.
You know what else lowers Raw? Not having Ronda there to kill her.
Well, that's debatable.
I can't wait for that. You're lucky Ronda stopped her countdown on Instagram. I was going to keep sending
I'm surprised she did.
I know. It sucks. I was so excited. I've been refreshing her Instagram every day.
Damn it, Ronda.
How dare you live a life away from social media and kayfabe? But I think we got to get to what I consider just... SmackDown to me has hit that stride where I'm every week now. I'm looking forward to it. I'm counting down to it. I'm loving SmackDown right now.
Well, let's get into it and let's talk about the big story this week. Team Hell No, back after 5 years.
Yes. Now, we touched on it last week, obviously, when they had our mark-out moment of the night, the Team Hell No reunion. This kind of was a confirmation that's okay, I think. Like, a lot of people, I think, were a little stressed about that. Like, yeah, we like it, but is this really what we want Daniel doing? And I'm on board, I think.
I am, too, after this week, even more so. This week really reminded me of their fun dynamic they have. It's been 5 years. I forgot.
Yeah, a lot happens in wrestling in 5 years. They do have a fun dynamic. And their arguments, they're both really good at making them feel like they don't feel corny. Like, you guys are clearly faking an argument here. But it really feels like they're disagreeing with each other.
It does, but at the same time, you can feel like it never feels like they're taking it too serious. Like,
right.
In the back, like in Daniel Bryan especially, and, you know, it's kind of fun.
Well, yeah, you never feel like they're about to explode on each other.
Right, and they realize what they're saying is ridiculous. Like, yes, right. you set your brother on fire, and you tried to abduct my wife.
Like, you're like a brother to me. You set your brother on fire. You tried to abduct my wife.
Tried.
Good stuff. Yeah. I still can't believe that Kane is starting SmackDown and ending SmackDown. And here I was during that whole Giants trilogy shitting on him. And here I am saying I love SmackDown every week. And this week, SmackDown was pretty much the Daniel Bryan and Kane show. And I enjoyed all of it.
Wrestling's a funny thing.
Now, Kane can barely move in the ring. But that doesn't matter with what I think they're telling right now.
And if he's going to be in tag matches with Daniel Bryan, yeah. He can do enough to be in a tag match.
Absolutely. Especially with my boy Bryan. So, okay. So, you are on completely getting on board with this.
Yeah,
with
and
then.
I still don't want it. Like, I don't want them to have, like, a 2-year reign as tag champs or anything.
No, it definitely feels like a one-off.
But this week reminded me why it's good. You know, there's a lot of people this wouldn't work with, but Kane and Daniel Bryan and their dynamic is working, and I'm going to be super entertained by it.
Yeah, that starting the show with the long promo, but a good promo with them two together.
The highlight was the middle when Daniel Bryan came with all, he's like, okay, if we're going to be a team, you've got to apologize. And here are all my grievances. He just went down the list of all the terrible things Kane's done to him in the past.
And then the little pep talk when they finally got on the same page, you know, before the match and the yes. I mark out one thing that's kind of corny with Daniel. And with Daniel, the corniness is almost forgivable and it's almost endearing. I think that's why he's been able to survive that. When they load up for that, are we going to go out there and become, you know, SmackDown Tag? Yes. You know, I'm on my couch doing it too. I'm like, let's go. Let's do it. It's just so much fun. And I didn't see this coming, this whole Team Hell No reunion. I don't know if they're probably not going to win. I don't care, though, because I think this is all a lot of fun. And they went out and had a barn burner of a match, candidate for match of the week, right with that other tag team match on Raw.
Agreed. Went against the Usos, and thank God for the Usos having some damn sense and coming out there calling out Team Hell No for getting title shots for hugs. I loved that promo.
Oh, and they gave each other.
They did three hugs.
One,
like,
two hugs.
Three hugs. That's three title shots.
They are good, man. I feel like they should give the Usos even more mic time.
Oh, yeah.
They should be running that tag division, not necessarily with the titles or winning all the time, but they should definitely be in that row all the time, playing the heel foil for all of these tag teams, even the other heels, because some they get cheered whenever they make a point. They're just so real. You feel that on the mic.
So speaking of that tag division, we had New Day this week in their first annual pancake eating contest for
July
the 4th of July.
Yeah. It was July 3rd.
Yeah, July 3rd.
But that's what they're calling it, New Day's 3rd of July pancake contest. They're not going to have it on July 4th.
At least they're accurate.
Yeah.
And this gets interrupted pretty quickly by Sanity.
Which is good.
Yeah, that's the story here to me. So Sanity's came in and taken out the Usos and New Day. The top dog. I know they're not the title holders, but still the top dogs in that tag division.
Even though they lost a match. They've lost a match. But to understand, they lost to three really good wrestlers. But I didn't like them losing that match last week coming in as a unit. But you're right. They are taking people out. This feud has the feel of possibly kind of the same vibe that the Usos and the New Day had. Because this is going to piss the New Day off. And there's nothing I like more than a pissed off New Day.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I thought we were getting a long, goofy pancake-eating segment. I was ready for it. I was like, okay, let's just have fun with this. And they cut it off right away. That's perfect.
You're taking Big E in that, though, right? If it would have continued?
Xavier Woods is a dark horse in that, man.
Okay.
I feel like that dude could put down some pancakes. He's a stocky dude.
We have the important conversations here. Sorry.
We have to have these conversations because they might be at a barbecue one day. But, okay, you take Big E. We'll discuss who would win the pancake-eating contest.
Yeah,
but I know who won the in-ring contest.
It wasn't the New Day.
The New Day got obliterated.
Yeah, I'm excited for this. Sanity seems like the perfect counterbalance to the New Day shtick.
Absolutely. They're gonna have a good rivalry. You know who's fun? Alexander Wolf. He does a lot of, you know, those little things that you love that you're always talking about?
He's my favorite one in Sanity.
He does a lot of, oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I like Killian Dane, man. I think Killian Dane's awesome.
Like you said, though. Wolf does the little things that are super entertaining.
So him picking up the pancake and eating it and putting it in his mouth as he's beating their ass and then throwing it at him after he chews it. Good stuff. So pro wrestling, but just good stuff.
What else you have noteworthy on SmackDown here?
Well, just like Raw revolved around Roman, this all kind of revolved around Team Hell No, but you did have some other good things. You had Jeff Hardy and The Miz in a good match for the U.S. Mm-hmm. Open Challenge.
Jeff Hardy beating Miz clean, I think, is a notable headline.
It is notable. And I like what Jeff's doing. He was a markout performer of the night candidate for me.
Yeah, it came down between him and Roman. We both really like the wrinkle Jeff Hardy's added to his character mm-hmm. the last few weeks.
Him and Miz went out, and that was a surprisingly good TV match. I haven't been too impressed with Jeff in the ring lately, just because it looks like he lost a step, which is understandable.
Yeah.
But he's had a few botches here and there.
The thing with him is, it's the in-between stuff isn't going to be anything special, but he still has the big spots. Mm-hmm. He's still not afraid to do something crazy. You know, we saw the Swanton in this match. We saw him take a huge bump into the barricade.
Yeah. Chest first.
So that's kind of, I think that's what you get with him at this point.
Well, not only that, his signature moves, too, are still some of the coolest. Mm-hmm. Like, you say the in-between stuff, but he can still do something crazy. But even his routine crazy stuff is cool. The whisper in the wind, right. Poetry in motion, mm-hmm. and, of course, the Swanton Bomb.
That stuff will always be there, and then a couple bumps where you're like, oh.
Right. Right. And, of course, The Miz always killed his user, so that was a good match. What else was on SmackDown? What do we got?
I'm ready for a Daniel Bryan-Miz feud, though. Because I'm ready to see Miz back doing what he does best and just stand in that ring and tell that story and have some real fire promos. I'm ready for that, Miz.
SummerSlam. Feels like the time to tell it. We're also, though, we're heating up with this Rusev-Styles title feud a little bit. I know we didn't get much this week. We got Styles beating Aiden English.
And then Rusev attacking Styles afterwards.
Yes, so they're doing everything they can to squash this Rusev Day stuff. It will not work. I think we're getting dueling Rusev Day Styles chance at Extreme Rules.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
And I think it's going to be fun. And I'm enjoying what Rusev's doing in this. Rusev's kind of being the one who I'm looking at in this to kind of flex his muscles. This is his moment here. If you can't go out in the main event spot in a good, this is going to be a good build. I like it so far. It's a good story. You got to have what they expect you to have. As far as the match goes. And I think Rusev's going to have that. I'm really excited for Extreme Rules with them too.
It feels kind of like an old school program. Like Styles is the long reigning champion. You know, Rusev is the newest challenger. So you mm-hmm. build him up for a few weeks. You cut some promos. I hope next week we have a good promo between the guys. Maybe mm-hmm. Rusev, he talks about how important this is. You know, this is his first title shot. It's a championship match. You can always build a feud around that title, especially mm-hmm. if it's your first shot at it.
Exactly.
So just go old school with it. Build Rusev up the best you can. They'll have a great match, and they'll both come out better because of it.
And it feels more old school, too, because Rusev is an old school heel. Like, at his core, he...
Yeah.
When I liked Rusev the most was that when he was not losing, he was going undefeated, that build up to WrestleMania 31 against John Cena. That was an old-school foreign. He came out in a tank. It was amazing. They kind of got away from that with the Rusev Day thing. And I don't know if I enjoyed it as much, although I'm happy where Rusev is at. I just think keeping it simple with Rusev, have him be that old-school foreign heel. I like that.
Just be consistent one way or the other.
Yeah.
The last few weeks, he hasn't been very heelish. It looked like they were kind of going to let him play into the face side of things.
Mm-hmm.
This week, he's very heelish. I just don't think it's been committed one way or the other.
Yeah.
Which is the worst thing.
Right. Maybe this pushes him all the way to the hill. Maybe they're using this feud to just, he's been looking face and he attacks Styles, and maybe next week he gets even more heelish till maybe that's mm-hmm. all gone again. I want Rusev as a heel anyway. So I'm on board with it.
But I thought, because he just comes across so likable.
He's cool. I think he can be that entertaining. Like, kind of like, you know how Owens is as a heel,
mm-hmm.
where he entertains the hell out of you. But I think Rusev can do that.
Okay. Yeah, I see that.
So not the, I am Rusev, not like a machine foreign heel. A modern day foreign heel. But I'm excited for Extreme Rules either way, no matter if he's going heel or face here.
It should be a real fun match.
Those and it's on Rusev Day.
Good dynamic.
It'd be cool if he won the title on Rusev Day. Yeah.
Huh. A lot of things fall on Rusev Day.
Yeah.
A couple things in the women's division before we wrap this thing up and get on to our main event. Shout out to Becky Lynch. Another win.
Winning
so her
streak.
Win streak continues. I would not hate it And it wouldn't be the worst babyface story in the world if you have your biggest babyface beat the annoying, shitty heel Carmella for the title in the end. I would not be mad if that's what this would eventually build towards.
In my head, SummerSlam keeps ending with Becky beating Carmella and Ronda beating Alexa. And, those stories kind of have a parallel to each other. I hope that's where they go with it. Becky is killing it right now. She's got a winning streak. This was the best I think Peyton Royce has looked in the ring, though, on the main roster.
You think so?
I really like Peyton Royce in this. I think Peyton Royce can work and go. And I think what's getting in the way of us not knowing that is just how fun and crazy they've been as characters. But Peyton Royce is like title level worker.
Oh, wow.
She can go.
Level worker.
She'll prove that. She will. I'm confident in that. 100%.
And I like the it's a simple way to do things, but they should do it more. They're just building Becky up by having her win matches.
Right.
In the kayfabe sense, that's what this is all about, and it's a simple way. Have her beat credible opponents, mid-card opponents, and it just slowly build her up.
Yeah, and I think she'll deliver in any match you put her in, any big stage. She's just, talk about likable. For some reason, she's just so likable out there. I want to see her win. I like it when she comes out. Her entrance is awesome. Just everything about her. And I think she was cooled off for so long that now that she is heating up, it's helping that movement even more. Because fans are like, yeah, we haven't seen her in forever. So, shout out to Becky. She's been killing it. Did you save the best for last?
It's time.
It's time! It's time! It's...
Sorry for markings. Mark out moment of the week.
So we got this mark out moment in the truest sense of the term. Chase, what was the one moment this week that physically made you jump up off your couch and mark out?
Asuka nearly slapping the head off of James Ellsworth. The slap heard around the world, literally.
That was the most painful slap I've ever seen.
It was so loud. That, you know, when the crowd reacts when they know that a bump almost went wrong or went bad, hope he's okay.
Like it's almost uncomfortable.
Oh my God. Should we check on James? Like that was a vicious slap. Like I feel like Asuka put just months of frustration out into that slap. You know Ellsworth was hurt, and there's no way he wasn't running away from her through that crowd, like cussing to himself, like, I can't feel my face.
Why'd I come back?
I hope he's getting paid well. I know I say that every time James is noteworthy on this show. Because every time something happens to James, I'm like, oh my gosh, I hope he's earning that paycheck. I hope he's getting paid adequately. It was a lot of fun. That's why it's our moment. That's the moment that made me jump off my couch. And that was a fun segment. I'm a Carmella mark. I'm going to enjoy anything really that she's doing as a heel.
And it was a week absent of a ton of big markout moments. You know, like we said, it was a lot of the smaller stuff this week we were enjoying. So that's the one. And I don't disagree with it.
She smacked the shit out of him. And he's got to go get in the ring with her again next week.
Poor guy.
So I'm sure we might have another markout moment coming.
All right, so on to Extreme Rules. We got one more week of television. One more Raw, one more SmackDown.
We do. And you're right, it does feel like a bridge to SummerSlam.
There's some good matchups, there's some good stories being told, and I feel like there's some pieces being put in place for good SummerSlam stuff. And that's what it is. There's no time off.
So if Money in the Bank started a lot of feuds, this is kind of the midway point of these feuds. Yeah, good call. And SummerSlam will be the cap off. A summer lawn story. We got some summer lawn stories here. I'm a mark for a good lawn story, so I'm happy with a lot of what's going on right now. Raw's been subpar and stressing me out, SmackDown's been making up for it, and the good stuff on Raw has been really good.
All right, man. It is time for our main event.
Yes, and I'm excited. I want to get in this DeLorean and go back. After all that Sasha Bailey stuff, I want to go back in time.
We'll get far, far away.
Get far away from it.
Go back to the Golden Era? The Territory Era?
Yeah, that's true.
Take me far away
from this
place.
Let's go back to the 80s.
All right, guys. Next stop, Ruthless Aggression.
Here we come.
Ah, Chase, welcome back.
I have to say, I don't mind coming back to the Ruthless Aggression era, obviously.
Nor should you.
No. It's a great era.
especially when it comes to this conversation. We are talking the little guys. Last week in the Attitude Era, the main focus of Chase's discussion, I hope you guys listened to it, check it out in the archives. If you didn't, the last 15 to 20 minutes of the episode is where you'll find our main events.
Yes, every episode of that. Make sure you guys go back. We got some good trilogies.
Chris Jericho is the main focus for Chase. So he came in during his Attitude Era. He was a former cruiserweight champion down in WCW. So the main theme going into this week is how Chris Jericho kind of opened the door for the smaller guys in WWE.
Right. For the smaller guys to be believable. You know, the smaller guys to have a chance.
So that's one thing my era meant to the quote-unquote smaller guys, the little guys, is the ceiling changed. And we're going to get to that. But there's something else it meant, too. Because with the purchase of WCW and the invasion angle, WWE, WWF at the time, they got their hands on that cruiserweight title. So now we had a cruiserweight division.
Yeah, just inherited one, pretty much out of nowhere. So I'm excited to see how you were feeling about that as a kid, because that's such a drastic. You went from having pretty much zero cruiserweights to having a whole division just like that.
And I didn't realize until I started putting this conversation together a little bit how many good memories and entertaining moments I had from the cruiserweight division. So it was a big part. We've talked about it a lot. The SmackDown brand was really hot during my era, and the cruiserweight division was a big part why, looking back on it. We had the SmackDown 6 going on, which we've talked about before and we'll talk about again. But this cruiserweight division on SmackDown with guys like Billy Kidman, Chavo Guerrero, Rey Mysterio, Jamie Noble, The Hurricane, these guys were awesome in the ring, and a couple of these dudes were very entertaining character-wise too.
So let me ask you one quick question, and you might get to this, but how was the vibe back then? I know it's hard remembering as a kid, but like, you know how when 205 Live was on our weekly television in this modern era, and people weren't, it was like a bathroom break. So you're saying you have, was the crowd hot for this every week? Was it a big thing? Was it something, did it feel special every week?
I don't remember it being a letdown. Like, I don't remember them making a big production out of it. Like, it felt separate. Like you said, for WCW, these guys didn't feel like they were going to be going for the Intercontinental title, or the World Heavyweight title. It felt separate, but not to the point where it did in this most recent run, where you're changing the ropes for their matches,
right,
and you're making it look different. Like, it still felt like part of the show, and mm-hmm. I felt like people were more engaged. I was younger then, so I was marking out for this stuff maybe a little bit more than most people, but I didn't get that vibe at all back then that this was a bathroom break. The women were still the bathroom break at that point.
Yeah, unfortunately. And I guess some of that, too, the reason why maybe it had a little more momentum was because the WCW, that cruiserweight title, was carrying a lot of history with it into the company. So that helps, at least a little bit.
And you had guys like Billy Kidman come in, who I think he won it 3 times maybe in WCW. Mm-hmm. And he was the constant dude that I remember just tearing the house down with all these people. He had 4 title reigns, so he was kind of the backbone of this division, I would say, like in ring wise.
And I gotta go back and watch some of his stuff. I really do.
I know you've seen his Shooting Star Press.
Yeah,
beautiful
that.
Shooting Star Press,
one of the best.
So you had guys like him. Rey Mysterio came in a couple years later. Chavo Guerrero, you know, they're doing their thing in the ring, incredible in-ring workers, the traditional cruiserweight style.
Mm-hmm.
And then you've got guys like The Hurricane and Jamie Noble, who could go in the ring, but it was their character work that was selling everything in this division to me at the time.
So were they kind of the humor? When you say character work, were they kind of like the lightheartedness of the division, or were they heels or something? Did they carry stories with their characters?
Jamie Noble did, going back and watching some things.
Yeah.
So his heel work and his promo work, like, he carried a lot of things back in his time.
Yeah. I can see that. Jamie Noble's super talented. Still working backstage today, by the way. Probably some of the brains behind a lot of these stories we love today.
Right. So he's kind of an example of the perfect guy who the cruiserweight division's for. Like, a super talented dude.
Yeah.
He's obviously got a good mind for the business, because we see what he's doing nowadays.
Right.
Most recently saw him in JAJ Security for Seth Rollins.
Yes, he was a hit in that too.
Just a natural entertainer, good promo, was good in the ring. Like, he had a power move set, which obviously wouldn't work for guys bigger than him, but it went really well with those cruiserweight guys.
Yeah, it always felt like you had to overcome Jamie Noble in the ring. Like, he would really beat on you. That, you're right, he did come across as dominating, as little as he was.
So he had all these things, and he's only 5'7".
Right.
So that's where the cruiserweight division comes in. Like, you let a guy like this shine. Like, you let a guy like Shane Helms, The Hurricane, shine.
Mm-hmm.
He was kind of on the other end of the spectrum. He was the comedic relief, but still winning titles.
still one of my favorite things, and I'll let you get to it, but Hurricane and The Rock backstage.
Just search Hurricane and The Rock's dressing room.
Yes, one of my favorite backstage promos I've seen from your era. Really good stuff. Must see. Sorry for marking recommendation.
I think it's, if you want to see a good cruiserweight feud, I don't know how many people listening are going to go back and watch a cruiserweight feud from 2002, but I think it was King of the Ring 2002 I was watching recently, and had a really good pre-match package put together. Jamie Noble versus the Hurricane for the title. And Jamie Noble always had Nydia at his side, of course, which is part of the whole entertaining act. So that would be something I recommend. And Jamie Noble versus Billy Kidman at Vengeance in 2002. Ooh, so in 2002, Jamie Noble was on a roll, and he's a centerpiece of a lot of these cruiserweight memories for me, which is funny because you don't, in the annals of wrestling history, you don't think of Jamie Noble really, but he has a lot of markout moments for me.
And you hadn't talked about this division much. So was this something that you went back, like, because there's so many things, you know, that get pushed back and you come back and you watch. For me, a lot of the Nation of Domination and the DOA stuff in the Attitude Era, I'm just now seeing, I'm like, I really enjoyed all that game warfare stuff. Is this a thing for you that you went back and you thought that?
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
A lot of these guys jumped out at me that I had no idea.
It's always fun to see that. But you mentioned Rey Mysterio. So his run, did he come in and start with Jamie Noble and Billy Kidman and all them? Did he come in and go straight to fighting Triple H and
was he in the cruiserweight division? He won the cruiserweight title when he came in.
So he was in there for a while then.
At least a year or two.
Wow.
He had a title crazy run. I think he beat Matt Hardy for the title.
For the cruiserweight title. Mm-hmm.
Another very memorable cruiserweight story was Matt Hardy at this time. So that's when you really started to see Matt shine. We know now how great he is character work wise. This is where you really started to see him step out and flex his muscles character wise. He had the Matt Hardy version 1, and he had to cut weight to get down to 205. So that was a weeks long story.
I was going to say, they're pushing the limits of the cruiserweight division there. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was part of the story.
Matt is not walking around at cruiserweight level at all.
Yeah, you had Hardy in there. You had Tajiri. You remember him?
Oh, yeah, I remember Tajiri.
Love Tajiri.
I enjoy Tajiri.
Yes, they had a strong cruiserweight division. What did you ask me, though? I forgot what you asked me.
Well, my main question was, Rey Mysterio feels like he should be the anchor of that.
So he came in, and he didn't come in immediately after the invasion. I don't know if it was a contract deal.
I think it was a year later.
Yeah, so he comes in, but he wins the cruiserweight title pretty quickly.
Mm-hmm.
But he's a good transition, because the cruiserweight division was entertaining, but I don't feel like it ever really reached the heights it did, say in WCW, when it was a highlight of the show and just having match of the night, on a weekly basis.
Mm-hmm.
It never quite got to that level. And I think Rey Mysterio is a good illustration as to why. So the other part of my era, why it's so significant for the little guys, you saw the ceiling start to change. Like, they kind of shattered the glass ceiling, so to speak.
Yeah, almost literally.
Right.
Yeah.
So you had, Rey Mysterio, he comes in cruiserweight champion. By the end of my era, he's a world heavyweight champion. Mm-hmm. Right after, I'm kind of fading away. I'm too cool for wrestling. Yeah, I'm in high school.
Going through that phase.
So in 2006, he wins the world heavyweight championship, which is the pinnacle.
Right. He's top of the company. Great moment, by the way.
So towards the beginning of my era to the end, that's the perfect illustration.
What it was.
And how I think that kind of, how it's good for the overall product and those guys, the cruiserweight division, though, obviously suffers, because you take a guy like Mysterio, Eddie Guerrero, Chris Benoit, Chris Jericho.
Mm-hmm.
All these guys were cruiserweight champions back in the old WCW days.
Mm-hmm.
Now they're at the top of the card. So you've taken some of the best talent out of that division.
It's weird, though, because it's good for the cruiserweights. As far as now they all have a chance to have those opportunities.
That's true.
But bad for the division. You know what I'm saying? It waters down the division, but it doesn't really... It's a good thing for the cruiserweights,
right,
though.
Because we wouldn't have talked about Jamie Noble.
Right. So if you're Jamie Noble and Billy Kidman and you see Rey Mysterio reach that point, you're not saying, oh, man, that's gonna deplete our roster. What I would be thinking is, oh, I can get to that point now. But I do see,
it opens up a spot for me in the cruiserweight division to step up.
Right, but I do see what you're saying, where it could water the division down. That then it comes a point where do you need a cruiserweight division? And that touches on what we're talking about during this whole trilogy, is what constant, like, it's our little guys. Mm-hmm. They're not, because they can cruiserweights implies that they fit into a certain division. But when these guys, like you mentioned, Chris Benoit, Eddie Guerrero, Rey Mysterio started getting these opportunities, they were still little guys. But were they cruiserweights still competing at that level? Or at that point, are they're not cruiserweights anymore. They're just smaller guys winning world heavyweight titles. I mean, that's just the question around how you talk about little guys throughout our eras.
And it was definitely a discussion they were having because the title goes away in 2007. So, yeah. You know, that whole division doesn't exist. And now we see it's back now in the modern era, which we'll touch on next week.
Mm-hmm.
But when you start blurring those lines, like, do you really need it? Do you know who the last cruiserweight champion was? A little trivia.
No, who was it?
Hornswoggle.
Really?
Yeah.
Good for him, Hornswoggle, the last like cruiserweight that. Champion. So let me ask you this then. Since you kind of got best of both worlds, you got the cruiserweights that wrestled for the world title. You saw kind of that glass ceiling break. But you're telling me you were really marking out for the stuff they were doing within the division. Because a lot of the cruiserweight stuff we were marking out for, you need two cruiserweights doing that exciting stuff, right?
Doing that. Mean, like, in a match?
Right, same? Yeah. The reason why you said the cruiserweight division was some of your favorite stuff is because in those matches, they were doing that cruiserweight style, and that was an awesome changeup.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of probably inevitably slowed down as more and more cruiserweights ventured out into the Intercontinental and World Heavyweight title realm. Was that something that you were enjoying?
Like, yeah, I liked the different style.
Yeah, but now you weren't getting as much as the cruiserweight style. You know what I'm saying? Like, when you were, the product wasn't as good because you had got the best guys were moving on to the World Heavyweight title.
Yeah, but you could argue as good as Benoit and Chris Jericho were, cruiserweight style, you know, Billy Kidman is more traditional. Rey Mysterio, mm-hmm. they're more traditional cruiserweights
right.
than those guys.
Whereas Chris
Benoit. So I feel like their cruiserweight talent was still there. But the difference is, like I said earlier, they had the characters to tell the stories too.
Right.
So that's, in WWE, it always comes back to that, especially in the cruiserweight division, because all these guys are so good in the ring.
Yeah. And that's always a point for your era every time stuff like this comes up, is that these guys could all go in the ring. So you didn't have to worry about like having bad matches or if they could compete or not. You knew they could. They proved that every week. Who was your favorite cruiserweight of the Ruthless Aggression era, of your era?
So it's definitely between, after going back, doing some research and really giving it some thought, because I wouldn't have been able to answer this a week ago. Jamie Noble or the Hurricane?
Wow.
It's the character work.
Yep. I mean, and we've said that a billion times when we talk about these trilogies, what marks us out the most, and it usually comes back to the character work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so be one of those two guys.
So those guys were carrying that division for a long time.
And while they're carrying that division, I want to touch on these other... They were the little guys in your era. So I want to touch on them to see where they are in mine. Chase talked about it when he started watching wrestling, cruiserweight division in WCW. You had Eddie Guerrero, Chris Benoit, Chris Jericho. So now all these guys, they made the jump after Chris Jericho did.
Mm-hmm.
Benoit, Eddie Guerrero, Perry Saturn.
They were the radicals.
Yeah, Dean Malenko, right? Mm-hmm. They come in and they're the radicals. And they're immediately not in the cruiserweight division. They come in at the mid-card level, so they're mm-hmm. competing for intercontinental titles right off the bat, that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So they were never, and I guess to you too, a lot of these guys, they were never cruiserweights in WWE.
No, and my point was last week that Chris Jericho made it believable for those guys mm-hmm. to be able to do that, to be able to go right into intercontinental title type of feuds.
I'm glad you said that, because that's one of my notes here, was it was never unbelievable to me that they could compete with guys like Triple H or even Brock Lesnar. And I think that's a credit to how good these guys were. Yes. Chris Benoit and Eddie Guerrero, these guys were so sharp, so credible in the ring. I had no trouble believing. If the guy outweighed him by 50 pounds, I still think Chris Benoit would kick his ass.
It's the sign of an outstanding wrestler. It's why we think Daniel Bryan can kick anybody's ass today. It's you got to have that it factor, and those guys had that.
And with those guys coming in, this was kind of when the in-ring stuff started to resemble the wrestling we see today. I've always talked about it. The reason I think my era is the best is because it's the mix of the ridiculous, not PG era storylines mixed with this new era ring work and better athletes.
Right.
You started to see that at this time with Benoit and Guerrero.
Mm-hmm.
The ring style started to change with these guys mixing it up with the bigger dudes. And that's why we see some of the best wrestling we've ever seen today.
That's crazy then to think that maybe they were the catalyst for one of the biggest differences between our eras, and something that you always kind of win on when we get into these debates about which era was better, was the in-ring work. You're saying that maybe it was these guys who started that, you think? That was still pretty early on after the invasion, right?
Mm-hmm.
That they came in?
Well, they were in before invasion. They made the jump in the Attitude Era, technically.
Technically they did,
yeah. But their impact was mostly made in my era.
Yeah. Chris Benoit.
So Benoit came in, I think he won the Intercontinental Championship real quick. And then
he had a good match. He had a great match at WrestleMania 17 with Angle, I believe. That was one of my last Benoit memories.
He got hurt for like the whole invasion angle and stuff. And he came back after that.
Yeah, that's the gap. Mm-hmm. Because like every time I go back and watch stuff from that invasion angle, Benoit is not really in it, which is weird to see. So those guys came in and changed how the in-ring work goes down in WWE. Because, I didn't get much of that at all.
I think I would put both Benoit and Guerrero, if I was to make like a top 10 list of just best in-ring wrestlers that I've seen, like from my time, I think I'd put those two in there.
It's hard to argue with it.
I think I would.
When somebody has that it factor, you're right. You can believe in that they'll kick anybody's ass. They can wrestle the Lucha. They can wrestle the heavyweight, anything.
And, of course, this culminates WrestleMania 20. We've all seen the images. We don't see it as much just because of the things that happened after, which it always makes it tricky to talk about these guys.
Oh, it's very tricky. To this day, I don't feel comfortable when I talk about Chris Benoit. It's something that I guess wrestling fans have mostly learned to live with. It's not something we really accept, but it's what we learn to live with.
But that WrestleMania 20, you have two former WCW Cruiserweight champions closing out the show as the two world champions, Chris Benoit and Eddie Guerrero. So that just symbolic. The little dudes had made it. Like, there was no more ceiling for those guys.
Full circle.
And I know Chris Jericho had done it. Mm-hmm. You know, he had won the title years ago before that.
Yeah.
But still, these guys, the Benoits, the Guerreros, the Rey Mysterios, they were still cast as like the underdog champions.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. Yeah, even with Jericho wrestling against all the guys, non-cruiserweights, he was still playing the role of the little guy who had to, you know, get over the fact that he was little. Whereas when Benoit and Guerrero started dominating them there in this era, their size wasn't a thing. Like, it wasn't the little guy overcoming. They had stories. They had, like, you didn't even look at it like that. At least that when I go back and watch, it seems like that's what it is. That is a crazy way to come full circle, though. Who did you like more during that era, Guerrero or Benoit? Feels like they kind of took up the same space for a little bit.
I liked Benoit wrestling-wise more. I loved his in-ring style. Mm-hmm. Just straight to the point, super realistic looking, probably because he was hitting the shit out of these dudes. Yeah. Just super technically talented. One of my favorite in-ring workers. But Guerrero had that. When he and Chavo joined as the Los Guerreros and started the lie, cheat, and steal gimmick.
Mm-hmm. We got some feedback last week that we didn't talk about Los Guerreros enough on our when discussing possible Mount Rushmores for our tag teams. Two guys that I always go back, one is Booker T, but the other one is Eddie Guerrero, where I think if I was watching during your era, those would have been two of my favorite guys in the company.
This was really when he was hitting his stride, like character-wise.
You said right around WrestleMania 20, right when he was the champ and stuff? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, and the year or two leading up to that, the Latino Heat, Lie, Cheat, and Steal.
Yeah.
You know, it was a lot of fun.
And by the time Guerrero and Benoit won, that had that moment, the wrestling had almost become, like the styles, it almost just all merged together. Because you had guys at that point, Brock Lesnar, who could do things cruiserweights do, but still, you know, big as hell. So it's like, by that time, you already see this happening, kind of the modern what we get today, whereas there are no one style versus one style. These guys can do it all.
And that I think this WrestleMania 20 in 2004 was important, like kind of symbolic of that. Like we're here now. There is no ceiling for these guys. There is no, soon thereafter, there was no more cruiserweight division.
Right. That's just crazy to me how your era started with the ceiling of a cruiserweight division, ended with, there's no ceilings. And all in the vacuum of that Ruthless Aggression era. So no wonder you had trouble remembering all that. That all happened. I mean, I know a lot happens in wrestling in short periods of time, but that all happened really fast.
Mm-hmm.
Evolution of the business, really.
It's just cool to see where that WrestleMania 20 moment led to, where we have Daniel Bryan and AJ Styles, and these guys winning titles, and we don't even think twice about it.
Faces of the company.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't wait to touch on that in our third episode of the era, the modern era. The modern era episodes of our trilogies have been some of the most exciting because we build to this narrative that we didn't see coming, and then we almost get to see the results for ourselves of the narrative that we kind of established here. And it's going to be so cool to see who stepped up and took the, you said, you know, they reached the moment, you know, they had arrived. Who kept that going and how did that keep going? Because that's always a big question when we transfer from the Ruthless Aggression era to the modern era, because there's a whole other era in between there, the Dark Ages, that we don't talk about. What happened during that time? Who fell off? Who came on? It'll be interesting to see who in your era helped get it to the next step, the next level where we are today.
Where we are today, like, I don't even look at the roster and see the little guys.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I see big guys. I see the Brons. I see the Big E's.
Right.
I see the big guys, the Romans. But I don't see, you know, like Seth Rollins would be a little guy in the past. I don't see him as a little guy. AJ Styles would have been a little guy. I don't really see him as a little guy. They're just wrestlers.
You're so right.
Normal wrestlers.
Back in the day, you were like, well, I see the little guys because there's not a lot of them.
Mm-hmm.
But all the big guys are just the same.
And, you know, how will Seth Rollins compete at a main event? You know, he's too small. You don't think that.
No, you don't think that at all. That's unfathomable. You're right. It's changed a lot. And a lot of that happened during your era.
Well, I guess if we were to say whose era was better for the little guys, what would you say, Chase?
I can't give you an argument that would justify mine being better, the Attitude Era being better for the little guys. I think my era was important in its own way. I think, like I said, Chris Jericho, you talk about all those guys, and you can talk about those guys, your Jamie Nobles, your Billy Kidmans, your Rey Mysterios. Chris Jericho came in by himself, debuted, facing off against the face of the company, future, the biggest star in Hollywood, and Dwayne Johnson in The Rock, and stared him down and talked shit to him. And a cruiserweight, quote unquote, had never had that stage in wrestling on that kind of television show. So I think that changed a lot, just that moment. But as far as just better for the little guys, yeah, your era had the cruiserweight title in WWE. You had the transition. You had the wrestling style that almost blended with everybody else. So yeah, it was very important and probably just better overall, better product.
It'll be fun next week to see how it matches up to the modern era, because now we're in an era where the cruiserweight division is back.
Mm-hmm.
So at the same time, now we're at a point where we don't see a difference between some of these little guys in the main title picture, but we have a cruiserweight division. So now we've got main event level guys the same size as cruiserweight guys. Some of them are separated, some of them aren't.
Yeah.
So now we have that interesting dynamic we'll get into.
Well, I can't wait to get into that.
So we will be back next week for that discussion. It'll be our go-home episode before Extreme Rules, and we'll be talking about the modern era little guys.
Loaded episode next week. We're going to give you our predictions for Extreme Rules, what we think is going to happen, get in markout mode, get you nice and ready around the water cooler, and then we're going to hit you. We're not going in the DeLorean. We'll stay in the Attitude Era, touch on some cruiserweights. And if you guys have been watching or hearing the internet or checking your tweeters or your Facebooks.
Tweeters
or your Facebooks. The 205 Live had a match of the year candidate the other night. You guys should go check it out. We'll touch on that next week. Loaded episode next week. I'm pumped.
Any of my Ruthless Aggression Era fans out there, let me know if I missed anybody. Hit us up on the social medias. Let us know. You know, send us an email even. We'll read it on the air next week. You know, we'll show some love to the people we forgot. Was there any cruiserweights out there you were marking out for that I forgot? Was I out of line again this week on any point? I hope I did
better.
Hot take
Wes all of a sudden over here. So next week, we wrap up the little guys. We get you ready for Extreme Rules. It's wrestling. It's always good. Thank you guys for joining us around the water cooler once again this week. Like Wes said, tell a friend. I hope you did your homework last week. I don't know why he's giving y'all homework, but I do agree.
Thanks for reminding me.
I do agree that you should all tell a friend, and it sounds like you all kind of did because we got some great feedback on our show last week. Let us know what you were thinking of these little guys. And like Wes said, we'll read your emails. We'll read your feedback on the show live on Sorry for Marking.
And still tell a friend.
And still tell a friend.
Thanks.
If anybody would like to press charges against Bailey, I'm just saying I'm not going to disagree with it. I want to end every show with that.
Okay, guys, that's our go-home cue right there.
Oh, God. Every time I want to start talking about Sasha, he wants to go home.
Bailey for prison is all you need to know about Chase's
That's
stance.
A good way to end it right there. Bailey for prison. Hashtag Bailey for prison. We'll see y'all next week. Sorry for marking.
See ya.
Yeah, did pretty good.
I think so. I think it went well.